alomancy, perhaps? Yet even with her copper on, she felt a presence from him. Once the room fell quiet, Kelsier began to speak.
"You've probably all heard of me by now," he said. "And you wouldn't be here if you weren't at least a little bit sympathetic to my cause."
Beside Vin, Breeze sipped his drink.
"Soothing and rioting aren't like other kinds of alomancy," he said quietly. "With most metals, pushing and pulling have opposite effects. With emotions, however, you can often produce the same result regardless of whether you soothe or riot. This doesn't hold for extreme emotional states, complete emotionlessness or utter passion. However, in most cases, it doesn't matter which power you use. People are not like solid bricks of metal. At any given time, they will have a dozen different emotions churning within them. An experienced soother can dampen everything but the emotion he wants to remain dominant."
Breeze turned slightly.
"Rudd, send in the blue server, please."
One of the guards nodded, cracking the door and whispering something to the man outside. A moment later, Vin saw a serving girl, wearing a faded blue dress, move through the crowd, filling drinks.
"My soothers are mixed with the crowd," Breeze said, his voice growing distracted. "The serving girls are a sign, telling my men which emotions to soothe away. They will work just as I do."
He trailed off, concentrating as he looked into the crowd.
"Fatigue," he whispered. "That's not a necessary emotion right now. Hunger? Distracting. Suspicion? Definitely not helpful. Yes, and as the soothers work, the rioters inflame the emotions we want the crowd to be feeling. Curiosity, that's what we need now. Yes, listen to Kelsier. You've heard legends and stories. See the man for yourself and be impressed."
"I know why you came today," Kelsier said quietly.
He spoke without much of the flamboyance Vin associated with the man, his tone quiet but direct. 12-hour days in a mill, mine, or forge. Beatings, lack of pay, poor food. And for what? So that you can return to your tenements at the day's end to find another tragedy? A friend slain by an uncaring taskmaster. A daughter taken to be some nobleman's plaything. A brother dead at the hand of a passing lord who was having an unpleasant day.
Yes, Breeze whispered. Good. Red, Rudd. Send in the girl in light red.
Another serving girl entered the room.
Passion and anger, Breeze said, his voice almost a mumble. But just a bit, just a nudge, a reminder.
Curious, Vin extinguished her copper for a moment, burning bronze instead, trying to sense Breeze's use of alomancy. No pulses came from him.
Of course, she thought. I forgot about Clubs's apprentice. He'd keep me from sensing any alomantic pulses.
She turned her copper back on. Kelsier continued to speak.
My friends, you're not alone in your tragedy. There are millions just like you, and they need you. I've not come to beg. We've had enough of that in our lives. I simply ask you to think. Where would you rather your energy be spent? On forging the Lord Ruler's weapons? Or on something more valuable?
He's not mentioning our troops, Vin thought. Or even what those who join with him are going to do. He doesn't want the workers to know details. Probably a good idea. Those he recruits can be sent to the army, and the rest won't be able to give away specific information.
You know why I am here, Kelsier said. You know my friend Yeadon and what he represents. Every ska in the city knows about the rebellion. Perhaps you've considered joining it. Most of you will not. Most of you will go back to your soot-stained mills, to your burning forges, to your dying homes. You'll go because this terrible life is familiar. But some of you, will come with me. And those are the men who will be remembered in the years to come. Remembered for having done something grand.
Many of the workers shared glances, though some just stared at their half-empty soup bowls. Finally, someone near the back of the room spoke.
"You're a fool," the man said. "The Lord Ruler will kill you. You don't rebel against God in his own city."
The room fell silent, tense. Vin sat up as Breeze whispered to himself. In the room, Kelsier stood quietly for a moment. Finally, he reached up and pulled back the sleeves on his jacket, revealing the crisscrossed scars on his arms.
"The Lord Ruler is not our God," he said quietly. "And he cannot kill me. He tried, but he failed. For I am the thing that he can never kill."
With that, Kelsier turned, walking from the room the way he had come.
Breeze said. "Well, that was a little dramatic. Rod, bring back the red and send out the brown."
A serving woman in brown walked into the crowd.
"Amazement," Breeze said. "And yes, pride. Soothe the anger for now."
The crowd sat quietly for a moment, the dining room eerily motionless. Finally, Yeadon stood up to speak and give some further encouragement, as well as an explanation of what the men should do, should they wish to hear more. As he talked, the men returned to their meals.
"Green Rod," Breeze said. "Yes. Let's make you all thoughtful and give you a nudge of loyalty. We wouldn't want anyone to run to the obligators, would we?" "Kells covered his tracks quite well, but the less the authorities hear, the better, eh? Oh, and what about you, Yeadon? You're a bit nervous, too. Let's soothe that. Take away your worries. Leave only that passion of yours. Hopefully it will be enough to cover up that stupid tone in your voice."
Finn continued to watch. Now that Kelsier had gone, she found it easier to focus on the crowd's reactions and on Breeze's work. As Yeadon spoke, the workers outside seemed to react exactly according to Breeze's mumbled instructions. Yeadon, too, showed effects of the soothing. He grew more comfortable, his voice more confident, as he spoke. Curious, Vin let her copper drop again. She concentrated, seeing if she could sense Breeze's touch on her emotions. She would be included in his general alimentic projections. He didn't have time to pick and choose individuals, except maybe Yeadon. It was very, very difficult to sense. Yet, as Breeze sat mumbling to himself, she began to feel the exact emotions he described. Vin couldn't help but be impressed. The few times that Kelsier had used alimancy on her emotions, his touch had been like a sudden blunt punch to the face. He had strength, but very little subtlety. Breeze's touch was incredibly delicate. He soothed certain emotions, dampening them while leaving others unaffected. Vin thought she could sense his men rioting on her emotions, too, but these touches weren't nearly as subtle as Breeze's. She left her copper off, watching for touches on her emotions as Yeadon continued his speech. He explained that the men who joined with them would have to leave their family and friends for a time, as long as a year, but would be fed well during that time. Vin felt her respect for Breeze continue to rise. Suddenly, she didn't feel so annoyed with Kelsier for handing her off. Breeze could only do one thing, but he obviously had a great deal of practice at it. Kelsier, as a Mistborn, had to learn all of the alimantic skills. It made sense that he wouldn't be as focused in any one power.
"I need to make certain he sends me to learn from the others," Vin thought. "They'll be masters at their own powers."
Vin turned her attention back to the dining room as Yeadon wrapped up.
"You heard Kelsier, the survivor of Hath Sin," he said. "The rumors about him are true. He's given up his thieving ways and turned his considerable attention toward working for the Ska Rebellion. Men, we are preparing for something grand, something that may indeed end up being our last struggle against the Final Empire. Join with us. Join with your brothers. Join with the survivor himself.
The dining room fell silent.
Bright red, Breeze said. I want those men to leave feeling passionate about what they've heard.
The emotions will fade, won't they? Vin said as a red-clothed serving girl entered the crowd.
Yes, Breeze said, sitting back and sliding the panel closed. But memories stay. If people associate strong emotion with an event, they'll remember it better.
A few moments later, Ham entered through the back door.
That went well. The men are leaving invigorated, and a number of them are staying behind. We'll have a good set of volunteers to send off to the caves.
Breeze shook his head.
It's not enough. Docs takes a few days to organize each of these meetings, and we only get about 20 men from each one. At this rate, we'll never hit 10,000 in time.
You think we need more meetings? Ham asked. That's going to be tough. We have to be very careful with these things, so only those who can be reasonably trusted are invited.
Breeze sat for a moment. Finally, he downed the rest of his wine.
I don't know, but we'll have to think of something. For now, let's return to the shop. I believe Kelsier wishes to hold a progress meeting this evening.
Kelsier looked to the west. The afternoon sun was a poisonous red, shining angrily through a sky of smoke. Just below it, Kelsier could see the silhouetted tip of a dark peak. Tyrion, closest of the Ashmounts. He stood atop Clubs's flat-roofed shop, listening to workers returning home on the streets below. A flat roof meant having to shovel off ash occasionally, which was why most ska buildings were peaked. But in Kelsier's opinion, the view was often worth a bit of trouble. Below him, the ska workers trudged in despondent ranks, their passing kicking up a small cloud of ash. Kelsier turned away from them, looking toward the northern horizon, toward the pits of Hath-Sin.
Where does it go? He thought. The Atium reaches the city, but then disappears. It isn't the Ministry. We've watched them, and no ska hands touch the metal. We assume it goes to the Treasury. We hope it does, at least.
While burning Atium, a Mistborn was virtually unstoppable, which was part of why it was so valuable. But his plan was about more than just wealth. He knew how much Atium was harvested at the pits, and Doxon had researched the amounts that the Lord Ruler doled out, at exorbitant prices, to the nobility. Barely a tenth of what was mined eventually found its way into noble hands. 90% of the Atium produced in the world had been stockpiled year after year for 1,000 years. With that much of the metal, Kelsier's team could intimidate even the most powerful of the noble houses. Eden's plan to hold the palace probably seemed futile to many. Indeed, on its own, it was doomed to fail. However, Kelsier's other plans... Kelsier glanced down at the small whitish bar in his hand. The 11th metal. He knew the rumors about it. He'd started them. Now he just had to make good on them. He sighed, turning eyes east toward Credic Shaw, the Lord Ruler's palace. The name was Terrace. It meant the Hill of 1,000 Spires. Appropriate, since the Imperial Palace resembled a patch of enormous black spears thrust into the ground. Some of the spires twisted, others were straight. Some were thick towers, others were thin and needle-like. They varied in height, but each one was tall, and each one ended in a point. Credic Shaw. That's where it had ended 3 years before, and he needed to go back. The trap door opened, and a figure climbed onto the roof. Kelsier turned with a raised eyebrow as Sazed brushed off his robe, then approached in his characteristically respectful posture. Even a rebellious Terraceman maintained the form of his training.
"Master Kelsier," Sazed said with a bow.
Kelsier nodded, and Sazed stepped up beside him, looking toward the Imperial Palace.
"Ah,"
he said to himself, as if understanding Kelsier's thoughts. Kelsier smiled. Sazed had been a valuable find indeed. Keepers were necessarily secretive, for the Lord Ruler had hunted them practically since the day of ascension itself. Some legends claimed that the ruler's complete subjugation of the Terrace people, including the breeding and stewardship programs, was simply an outgrowth of his hatred for keepers.
"I wonder what he would think if he knew a keeper was in Luthadel," Kelsier said. "Barely a short walk from the palace itself."
"Let us hope we never find out, Master Kelsier," Sazed said.
"I appreciate your willingness to come here to the city, Saze. I know it's a risk."
"This is a good work," Sazed said, "and this plan is dangerous for all involved. Indeed, simply living is dangerous for me, I think. It is not healthy to belong to a sect that the Lord Ruler himself fears."
"Fears?" Kelsier asked, turning to look up at Sazed. Despite Kelsier's above-average height, the Terraceman was still a good head taller.
"I'm not sure if he fears anything, Saze."
"He fears the Keepers," Sazed said. "Definitely and inexplicably. Perhaps it is because of our powers. We are not Allomancers, but something else. Something unknown to him."
Kelsier nodded, turning back toward the city. He had so many plans, so much work to do, and at the core of it all were the Ska. The poor, humble, defeated Ska.
"Tell me about another one, Sayes," Kelsier said. "One with power."
"Power?" Sayes had asked. "That is a relative term when applied to religion, I think. Perhaps you would like to hear of Jahism. Its followers were quite faithful and devout."
"Tell me about them."
"Jahism was founded by a single man," Sazed said. "His true name is Lost, though his followers simply called him the Jah. He was murdered by a local king for preaching discord, something he was apparently very good at, but that only made his following larger. The Jahists thought that they earned happiness proportional to their overt devotion, and were known for frequent and fervent professions of faith. Apparently, speaking with a Jahist could be frustrating, since they tended to end nearly every sentence with, 'Praise the Jah.'"
"That's nice, Sayes," Kelsier said, "but power is more than just words."
"Oh, quite indeed," Sayes had agreed. "The Jahists were strong in their faith. Legends say that the ministry had to wipe them out completely, since not one Jahist would accept the Lord Ruler as God. They didn't last long past the ascension, but only because they were so blatant that they were easy to hunt down and kill."
Kelsier nodded, then he smiled, eyeing Sazed.
"You didn't ask me if I wanted to convert."
"My apologies, Master Kelsier," Sazed said, "but the religion does not suit you, I think. It has a level of brashness that you might find appealing, but you would find the theology simplistic."
"You're getting to know me too well," Kelsier said, still regarding the city. "In the end, after kingdoms and armies had fallen, the religions were still fighting, weren't they?"
"Indeed," Sazed said. "Some of the more resilient religions lasted all the way until the 5th century.
"What made them so strong?" Kelsier said. "How did they do it, Sayes? What gave these theologies such power over people?"
"It wasn't any one thing, I think," Sazed said. "Some were strong through honest faith, others because of the hope they promised. Others were coercive."
"But they all had passion," Kelsier said.
"Yes, Master Kelsier," Sazed said with a nod. "That is a quite true statement."
"That's what we've lost," Kelsier said, looking over the city with its hundreds of thousands, barely a handful of whom would dare fight. "They don't have faith in the Lord Ruler. They simply fear him. They don't have anything left to believe in."
"What do you believe in, if I may ask, Master Kelsier?"
Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
"I'm not exactly sure yet," he admitted. "But overthrowing the final empire seems like a good start.
Are there any religions on your list that include the slaughter of noblemen as a holy duty? Sazed frowned disapprovingly.
I do not believe so, Master Kelsier.
Maybe I should found one, Kelsier said with an idle smile. Anyway, have Breeze and Vin returned yet?
They arrived just before I came up here.
Good, Kelsier said with a nod. Tell them I'll be down in a moment. Vin sat in her overstuffed chair in the conference room, legs tucked beneath her, trying to study Marsh out of the corner of her eye. He looked so much like Kelsier. He was just stern. He wasn't angry, nor was he grumpy like Clubs. He just wasn't happy. He sat in his chair, a neutral expression on his face. The others had all arrived except for Kelsier, and they were chatting quietly amongst themselves. Vin caught Lestiborness's eye and waved him over. The teenage boy approached and crouched beside her chair.
Marsh, Vin whispered beneath the general hum of the room. Is that a nickname?
Nodding without the call of his parents.
Vin paused, trying to decipher the boy's eastern dialect.
Not a nickname, then?
Lestiborness shook his head.
He was in one, though.
What was it?
Iron Eyes. Others stopped using it. Too calling close to an iron in the real eyes, eh? Inquisitor.
Vin glanced at Marsh again. His expression was hard, his eyes unwavering, almost like they were made of iron. She could see why people would stop using the nickname. Even referring to a steel inquisitor made her shiver.
Thanks.
Lestiborness smiled. He was an earnest boy. Strange, intense, and jumpy, but earnest. He retreated to his stool as Kelsier finally arrived.
All right, crew, he said. What have we got?
Besides the bad news? Breeze asked.
Let's hear it. It's been 12 weeks and we've gathered under 2,000 men, Ham said. Even with the numbers the rebellion already has, we're going to fall short.
Docs? Kelsier asked. Can we get more meetings?
Probably,
Doxson said from his seat beside a table stacked with ledgers.
Are you sure you want to take that risk, Kelsier?
Eden asked. His attitude had improved during the last few weeks, especially once Kelsier's recruits had begun to file in. As Reen had always said, results made quick friends.
We're already in danger, Eden continued. Rumors are all over the underground. If we make any more of a stir, the Ministry is going to realize that something major is happening.
He's probably right, Kel,
Doxson said.
Besides, there are only so many Scar willing to listen. Luthadel is big, true, but our movement here is limited.
All right, Kelsier said. So we'll start working the other towns in the area. Breeze, can you split your crew into two effective groups?
I suppose, Breeze said hesitantly.
We can have one team work in Luthadel and the other work in surrounding towns. I can probably make it to all of the meetings, assuming we organize them so they don't happen at the same time.
That many meetings will expose us even more, Eden said.
And that, by the way, brings up another problem, Ham said. Weren't we supposed to be working on infiltrating the Ministry's ranks?
Well, Kelsier asked, turning to Marsh. Marsh shook his head.
The Ministry is tight. I need more time.
It's not going to happen, Clubs grumbled. Rebellion's already tried it.
Eden nodded.
We've tried to get spies into the inner ministries a dozen times. It's impossible.
The room fell silent.
I have an idea, Vin said quietly.
Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
Cayman, she said. He was working on a job before you recruited me. Actually, it was the job that got us spotted by the obligators. The core of that plan was organized by another thief, a crew leader named Theron. He was setting up a fake canal convoy to carry Ministry funds to Luthadel.
And?
Breeze asked.
Those same canal boats would have brought new Ministry acolytes to Luthadel for the final part of their training. Theron has a contact along the route, a lesser obligator who was open to bribes. Maybe we could get him to add an acolyte to the group from his local chapter.
Kelsier nodded thoughtfully. It's worth looking into. Doxson scribbled something on a sheet with his fountain pen.
I'll contact Theron and see if his informant is still viable.
How are our resources coming? Kelsier asked. Doxson shrugged.
Ham found us 2 ex-soldier instructors. The weapons, however... Well, Renu and I are making contacts and initiating deals, but we can't move very quickly. Fortunately, when the weapons come, they should come in bulk.
Kelsier nodded. That's everything, right? Breeze cleared his throat.
I've been hearing a lot of rumors on the streets, Kelsier, he said. The people are talking about this 11th metal of yours.
Good, Kelsier said.
Aren't you worried that the Lord Ruler will hear? If he has forewarning of what you're going to do, it will be much more difficult to resist him.
He didn't say kill, Vin thought. They don't think that Kelsier can do it. Kelsier just smiled. Don't worry about the Lord Ruler. I've got things under control. In fact, I intend to pay the Lord Ruler a personal visit sometime during the next few days.
Visit? Eden asked uncomfortably. You're going to visit the Lord Ruler? Are you ins...
Eden trailed off, then glanced at the rest of the room.
Right. I forgot.
He's catching on, Doxson noted.
Heavy footsteps sounded in the hallway, and one of Ham's guards entered a moment later. He made his way to Ham's chair and whispered a brief message. Ham frowned.
What? Kelsier asked.
An incident, Ham said.
Incident? Doxson asked. What kind of incident?
You know that lair we met in a few weeks back, Ham said. The one where Kel first introduced his plan?
Cayman's lair, Vin thought, growing apprehensive.
Well, Ham said, apparently the Ministry found it.
It seems Rashik represents a growing faction in Terrace culture. A large number of the youths think that their unusual powers should be used for more than just fieldwork, husbandry, and stone carving. They are rowdy, even violent, far different from the quiet, discerning Terrace philosophers and holy men that I have known. They will have to be watched carefully, these Terracemen. They could be very dangerous, if given the opportunity and the motivation.
11. Kelsier paused in the doorway, blocking Vin's view. She stooped down, trying to peek past him into the lair, but too many people were in the way. She could only tell that the door hung at an angle, splintered, the upper hinge torn free. Kelsier stood for a long moment. Finally he turned, looking past Doxson toward her.
Ham is right, Vin. You may not want to see this.
Vin stood where she was, looking at him resolutely. Finally, Kelsier sighed, stepping into the room. Doxson followed, and Vin could finally see what they had been blocking. The floor was scattered with corpses, their twisted limbs shadowed and haunting in the light of Doxson's solitary lantern. They weren't rotting yet. The attack had happened only that morning. But there was still a smell of death about the room. The scent of blood drying slowly, the scent of misery and of terror. Vin remained in the doorway. She'd seen death before, seen it often on the streets. Knifings in alleys, beatings in lairs, children dead of starvation. She had once seen an old woman's neck snapped by the backhand of an annoyed lord. The body had lain in the street for 3 days before a Ska corpse crew had finally come for it. Yet none of those incidents had the same air of intentional butchery that she saw in Cayman's lair. These men hadn't simply been killed. They had been torn apart. Limbs lay separated from torsos, broken chairs and tables impaled chests. There were only a few patches of floor that were not covered in sticky dark blood. Kelsier glanced at her, obviously expecting some sort of reaction. She stood, looking over the death, feeling numb. What should her reaction be? These were the men who had mistreated her, stolen from her, beaten her. And yet these were the men who had sheltered her, included her, and fed her when others might have simply given her to the whoremasters. Rhen probably would have berated her for the traitorous sadness she felt at the sight. Of course he had always been angry when, as a child, she'd cried as they'd left one town for another, not wanting to leave the people she'd grown to know, no matter how cruel or indifferent they were. Apparently she hadn't quite gotten over that weakness. She stepped into the room, not shedding any tears for these men, yet at the same time wishing that they had not come to such an end. In addition, the gore itself was disturbing. She tried to force herself to maintain a stiff face in front of the others, but she found herself cringing occasionally, glancing away from mangled corpses. The ones who had performed the attack had been quite thorough. "This seems extreme, even for the Ministry," she thought. "What kind of person would do something like this?" "Inquisitor," Doxson said quietly, kneeling by a corpse. Kelsier nodded. Behind Vin, Sazed stepped into the room, careful to keep his robes clear of the blood. Vin turned toward the terraceman, letting his actions distract her from a particularly grisly corpse. Kelsier was a Mistborn, and Doxson was supposedly a capable warrior. Ham and his men were securing the area. However, others, Breeze, Yeadon, and Clubs, had stayed behind. The area was too dangerous. Kelsier had even resisted Vin's desire to come. Yet he had brought Sazed without apparent hesitation. The move, subtle though it was, made Vin regard the steward with a new curiosity. Why would it be too dangerous for Mistings, yet safe enough for a Terraceman steward? Was Sazed a warrior? How would he have learned to fight? Terracemen were supposedly raised from birth by very careful trainers. Sazed's smooth step and calm face gave her few clues. He didn't appear shocked by the carnage, however. "Interesting," Vin thought, picking her way through shattered furniture, stepping clear of blood pools, making her way to Kelsier's side. He crouched beside a pair of corpses. One, Vin noticed in a moment of shock, had been Yulef. The boy's face was contorted and pained, the front of his chest a mass of broken bones and ripped flesh, as if someone had forcibly torn the ribcage apart with his hands. Vin shivered, looking away. "This isn't good," Kelsier said quietly. "Steel Inquisitors don't generally bother with simple thieving crews. Usually the Obligators would just come down with their troops and take everyone captive, then use them to make a good show on an execution day. An Inquisitor would only get involved if it had a special interest in the crew."
"You think," Vin said, "you think it might be the same one as before?"
Kelsier nodded. "There are only about 20 Steel Inquisitors in the whole of the Final Empire, and half of them are out of Luthadel at any given time. I find it too much of a coincidence that you would catch one's interest, escape, and then have your old lair get hit." Vin stood quietly, forcing herself to look down at Yulef's body and confront her sorrow. He had betrayed her in the end, but for a time he had almost been a friend.
"So," she said quietly, "the Inquisitor still has my scent?"
Kelsier nodded, standing.
"Then this is my fault," Vin said. "Yulef and the others."
"It was Cayman's fault," Kelsier said firmly. "He's the one who tried to scam an Obligator." He paused, then looked over at her. "You going to be all right?" Vin looked up from Yulef's mangled corpse, trying to remain strong. She shrugged.
"None of them were my friends."
"That's kind of cold-hearted, Vin."
"I know,"
she said with a quiet nod. Kelsier regarded her for a moment, then crossed the room to speak with Doxson. Vin looked back at Yulef's wounds. They looked like the work of some crazed animal, not a single man.
"The Inquisitor must have had help," Vin told herself. "There is no way one person, even an Inquisitor, could have done all this."
There was a pileup of bodies near the bolt exit, but a quick count told her that most, if not all, of the crew was accounted for. One man couldn't have gotten to all of them quickly enough. Could he have?
There are a lot of things we don't know about the Inquisitors, Kelsier had told her. They don't follow the normal rules.
Vin shivered again. Footsteps sounded on the stairs, and Vin grew tense, crouching and preparing to run. Ham's familiar figure appeared in the stairwell.
Area secure, he said, holding up a second lantern. No sign of obligators or garrisoners.
That's their style, Kelsier said. They want the massacre to be discovered. They left the dead as a sign. The room fell silent, save for a low mumbling from Sazed, who stood at the far left side of the room. Vin picked her way over to him, listening to the rhythmic cadence of his voice. Eventually, he stopped speaking, then bowed his head and closed his eyes.
"What was that?" Vin asked as he looked up again.
"A prayer," Sazed said. "A death chant of the Kazai. It is meant to awaken the spirits of the dead and entice them free from their flesh, so that they may return to the Mountain of Souls."
He glanced at her.
"I can teach you of the religion if you wish, mistress. The Kazai were an interesting people, very familiar with death."
Vin shook her head.
"Not right now. You said their prayer. Is this the religion you believe in, then?"
"I believe in them all."
Vin frowned.
"None of them contradict each other?"
Sazed smiled.
"Oh, often and frequently they do. But I respect the truths behind them, and I believe in the need for each one to be remembered."
"Then how do you decide which religion's prayer to use?" Vin asked.
"It just seemed appropriate," Sazed said quietly, regarding the scene of shadowed death.
"Kel," Doxson called from the back of the room, "come look at this."
Kelsier moved to join him, as did Vin. Doxson stood by the long corridor-like chamber that had been her crew's sleeping quarters. Vin poked her head inside, expecting to find a scene similar to the one in the common room. Instead, there was only a single corpse tied to a chair. In the weak light, she could barely make out that his eyes had been gouged out. Kelsier stood quietly for a moment. "That's the man I put in charge."
"Mylef," Vin said with a nod.
"What about him?" "He was killed slowly," Kelsier said. "Look at the amount of blood on the floor, the way his limbs are twisted. He had time to scream and struggle."
"Torture,"
Doxson said, nodding. Vin felt a chill. She glanced up at Kelsier.
"Shall we move our base?" Ham asked.
Kelsier slowly shook his head. "When Clubs came to this lair, he would have worn a disguise to and from the meeting, hiding his limp. It's his job as a smoker to make certain that you can't find him just by asking around on the street. None of the people in this crew could have betrayed us. We should still be safe." No one spoke the obvious. The Inquisitor shouldn't have been able to find this lair, either. Kelsier stepped back into the main room, pulling Doxson aside and speaking to him in a quiet voice. Vin edged closer, trying to hear what they were saying, but Sazed placed a restraining hand on her shoulder.
"Mistress Vin," he said disapprovingly, "if Master Kelsier wanted us to hear what he was saying, would he not speak in a louder voice?"
Vin shot the terraceman an angry glance. Then she reached inside and burned tin. The sudden stench of blood almost staggered her. She could hear Sazed's breathing. The room was no longer dark. In fact, the brilliant light of two lanterns made her eyes water. She became aware of the stuffy, unventilated air. And she could hear, quite distinctly, Doxson's voice.
"Went to check on him a couple times, like you asked. You'll find him 3 streets west of the Fourwell Crossroads."
Kelsier nodded. "Ham," he said in a loud voice, causing Vin to jump. Sazed looked down at her with disapproving eyes.
"He knows something of allomancy," Vin thought, reading the man's expression. "He guessed what I was doing."
"Yes, Kel,"
Ham said, peeking out of the back room. "Take the others back to the shop," Kelsier said.
And be careful.
Of course, Ham promised.
Vin eyed Kelsier, then resentfully allowed herself to be ushered from the lair with Sazed and Doxson.
I should have taken the carriage, Kelsier thought, frustrated by his slow pace. The others could have walked back from Cayman's lair. He itched to burn steel and begin jumping toward his destination. Unfortunately, it was very difficult to remain inconspicuous when flying through the city during the full light of day. Kelsier adjusted his hat and continued walking. A nobleman pedestrian was not an irregular sight, especially in the commercial district, where more fortunate ska and less fortunate noblemen mixed on the streets, though each group did its best to ignore the other.
Patience. Speed doesn't matter. If they know about him, he's already dead.
Kelsier entered a large crossroad square. Four wells sat in its corners, and a massive copper fountain, its green skin caked and blackened by soot, dominated the square's center. The statue depicted the Lord Ruler standing dramatically in cloak and armor, a formless representation of the deepness dead in the water at his feet. Kelsier passed the fountain, its waters flaked with a recent ashfall. Ska beggars called out from the street sides, their pitiful voices walking a fine line between audibility and annoyance. The Lord Ruler barely suffered them. Only ska with severe disfigurements were allowed to beg. Their pitiful life, however, was not something even plantation ska would envy. Kelsier tossed them a few clips, not caring that doing so made him stand out, and continued to walk. Three streets over, he found a much smaller crossroads. It was also rimmed by beggars, but no fine fountain splashed the center of this intersection, nor did the corners contain wells to draw traffic. The beggars here were even more pathetic. These were the sorry individuals who were too wretched to fight themselves a spot in a major square. Malnourished children and age-withered adults called out with apprehensive voices. Men missing two or more limbs huddled in corners, their soot-stained forms almost invisible in the shadows. Kelsier reached reflexively for his coin purse.
Stay on track, he told himself. You can't save them all, not with coins. There will be time for these once the final empire is gone.
Ignoring the piteous cries, which became louder once the beggars realized he was watching them, Kelsier studied each face in turn. He had only seen Cayman briefly, but he thought that he'd recognize the man. However, none of the faces looked right, and none of the beggars had Cayman's girth, which should have still been noticeable despite weeks of starvation.
He's not here, Kelsier thought with dissatisfaction.
Kelsier's order, given to Mylef, the new crew leader, that Cayman be made a beggar had been carried out. Doxson had checked on Cayman to make certain. Cayman's absence in the square could simply mean that he'd gained a better spot. It could also mean that the ministry had found him. Kelsier stood quietly for a moment, listening to the beggar's haunted moanings. A few flakes of ash began to float down from the sky. Something was wrong. There weren't any beggars near the north end of the intersection. Kelsier burned tin and smelled blood on the air. He kicked off his shoes, then pulled his belt free. His cloak clasp went next, the fine garment dropping to the cobblestones. That done, the only metal remaining on his body was in his coin pouch. He dumped a few coins into his hand, then carefully made his way forward, leaving his discarded garments for the beggars. The smell of death grew stronger. But he didn't hear anything except scrambling beggars behind him. He edged onto the northern street, immediately noticing a thin alleyway to his left. Taking a breath, he flared pewter and ducked inside. The thin, dark alley was clogged with refuse and ash. No one waited for him. At least, no one living. Cayman, crew leader turned beggar, hung quietly from a rope tied far above. His corpse spun leisurely in the breeze, ash falling lightly around it. He hadn't been hanged in the conventional fashion. The rope had been tied to a hook, then rammed down his throat. The bloodied end of the hook jutted from his skin below the chin, and he swung with head tipped back, rope running out of his mouth. His hands were tied, his still plump body showing signs of torture.
This isn't good.
A foot scraped the cobblestones behind, and Kelsier spun, flaring steel, and sprang forth a handful of coins. With a girlish yelp, a small figure ducked to the ground, coins deflected as she burned steel.
"Vin?" Kelsier said.
He cursed, reaching out and yanking her into the alleyway. He glanced around the corner, watching the beggars perk up as they heard coins hit the cobblestones.
"What are you doing here?" he demanded, turning back.
Vin wore the same brown overalls and gray shirt she had before, though she had at least had the sense to wear a nondescript cloak with the hood up.
"I wanted to see what you were doing," she said,
cringing slightly before his anger.
"This could have been dangerous," Kelsier said. "What were you thinking?"
Vin cowered further. Kelsier calmed himself.
"You can't blame her for being curious," he thought, as a few brave beggars scuttled in the street after the coins. "She's just..."
Kelsier froze. It was so subtle he almost missed it. Vin was soothing his emotions. He glanced down. The girl was obviously trying to make herself invisible against the corner of the wall. She seemed so timid, yet he caught a hidden glimmer of determination in her eyes. This child had made an art of making herself seem harmless.
"So subtle," Kelsier thought. "How did she get so good so quickly?" "You don't have to use allomancy, Vin," Kelsier said softly. "I'm not going to hurt you. You know that."
She flushed.
"I didn't mean it. It's just habit. Even still."
"It's all right," Kelsier said, laying a hand on her shoulder. "Just remember, no matter what Breeze says, it's bad manners to touch the emotions of your friends. Plus, the noblemen consider it an insult to use allomancy in formal settings. Those reflexes will get you into trouble if you don't learn to control them."
She nodded, rising to study Cayman. Kelsier expected her to turn away in disgust, but she just stood quietly, a look of grim satisfaction on her face.
"No, this one isn't weak," Kelsier thought. "No matter what, she'd have you believe."
"They tortured him here?" she asked. "Out in the open?"
Kelsier nodded, imagining the screams reverberating out to the uncomfortable beggars. The ministry liked to be very visible with its punishments.
"Why the hook?" Vin asked.
"It's a ritual killing reserved for the most reprehensible of sinners. People who misuse allomancy."
Vin frowned.
"Cayman was an allomancer?"
Kelsier shook his head. "He must have admitted to something heinous during his torture." Kelsier glanced at Vin. "He must have known what you were, Vin. He used you intentionally."
She paled slightly. "Then the ministry knows that I'm a Mistborn?"
"Perhaps. It depends on whether Cayman knew or not. He could have assumed you were just a Misting."
She stood quietly for a moment.
"What does this mean for my part in the job, then?"
"We'll continue as planned," Kelsier said. "Only a couple of obligators saw you at the Canton building, and it takes a very rare man to connect the Ska servant and the well-dressed noblewoman as the same person."
"And the Inquisitor?"
Vin asked softly. Kelsier didn't have an answer to that one.
"Come on," he finally said. "We've already attracted too much attention."
What would it be like if every nation, from the Isles in the south to the Terrace Hills in the north, were united under a single government? What wonders could be achieved, what progress could be made, if mankind were to permanently set aside its squabblings and join together? It is too much, I suppose, to even hope for. A single, unified empire of man? It could never happen. 12. Vin resisted the urge to pick at her noblewoman's dress. Even after a half-week of being forced to wear one, Sazed's suggestion, she found the bulky garment uncomfortable. It pulled tightly at her waist and chest, then fell to the floor with several layers of ruffled fabric making it difficult to walk. She kept feeling as if she were going to trip, and despite the gown's bulk, she felt as if she were somehow exposed by how tight it was through the chest, not to mention the neckline's low curve. Though she had exposed nearly as much skin when wearing normal buttoning shirts, this seemed different somehow. Still, she had to admit that the gown made quite a difference. The girl who stood in the mirror before her was a strange, foreign creature. The light blue dress, with its white ruffles and lace, matched the sapphire barrettes in her hair. Sazed claimed he wouldn't be happy until her hair was at least shoulder length, but he had still suggested that she purchase the brooch-like barrettes and put them just above each ear.
"Often aristocrats don't hide their deficiencies," he had explained. "Instead, they highlight them. Draw attention to your short hair, and instead of thinking you're unfashionable, they might be impressed by the statement you are making."
She also wore a sapphire necklace, modest by noble standards, but still worth more than 200 boxings. It was complemented by a single ruby bracelet for accentuation. Apparently, the current fashion dictated a single splash of a different color to provide contrast. And it was all hers, paid for by crew funds. If she ran, taking the jewelry and her 3,000 boxings, she could live for decades. It was more tempting than she wanted to admit. Images of Cayman's men, their corpses twisted and dead in the quiet lair, kept returning to her. That was probably what waited for her if she remained. Why then didn't she go? She turned from the mirror, putting on a light blue silken shawl, the female aristocrat's version of a cloak. Why didn't she leave? Perhaps it was her promise to Kelsier. He had given her the gift of allomancy, and he depended on her. Perhaps it was her duty to the others. In order to survive, crews needed each person to do their separate job. Reen's training told her that these men were fools, but she was tempted, enticed, by the possibility that Kelsier and the others offered. In the end, it wasn't the wealth or the job's thrill that made her stay. It was the shadowed prospect, unlikely and unreasonable but still seductive, of a group whose members actually trusted one another. She had to stay. She had to know if it lasted, or if it was, as Reen's growing whispers promised, all a lie. She turned and left her room, walking toward the front of Mansion Renu, where Sazed waited with the carriage. She had decided to stay, and that meant she had to do her part. It was time to make her first appearance as a noblewoman. The carriage shook suddenly, and Vin jumped in surprise. The vehicle continued normally, however, and Sazed didn't move from his place in the driver's seat. A sound came from above. Vin flared her metals, tensing as a figure dropped down off the top of the carriage and landed on the footman's rest just outside her door. Kelsier smiled as he peeked his head in the window. Vin let out a relieved breath, settling back into her seat.
"You could have just asked us to pick you up."
"No need," Kelsier said, pulling open the carriage door and swinging inside. It was already dark outside, and he wore his mist cloak. "I warned Sazed I'd be dropping by sometime during the trip."
"And you didn't tell me?"
Kelsier winked, pulling the door shut. "I figured I still owed you for surprising me in that alleyway last week."
"How very adult of you," Vin said flatly.
"I've always been very confident in my immaturity." "So, are you ready for this evening?" Vin shrugged, trying to hide her nervousness. She glanced down.
How do I look?"
"Splendid," Kelsier said. "Just like a noble young lady. Don't be nervous, Vin. The disguise is perfect." For some reason, that didn't feel like the answer she'd wanted to hear.
"Kelsier?"
"Yes?"
"I've been meaning to ask this for a while," she said, glancing out the window, though all she could see is mist. "I understand that you think this is important, having a spy among the nobility. But, well, do we really have to do it this way?
Couldn't we get street informants to tell us what we need to know about house politics?
Perhaps, Kelsier said. But those men are called informants for a reason, Vin. Every question you ask them gives a clue about your true motives. Even meeting with them reveals a bit of information that they could sell to someone else. It's better to rely on them as little as possible.
Vin sighed.
I don't send you into danger heedlessly, Vin, Kelsier said, leaning forward. We do need a spy among the nobility. Informants generally get their information from servants. But most aristocrats are not fools. Important meetings go on where no servant can overhear them.
And you expect me to be able to get into such meetings?
Perhaps, Kelsier said. Perhaps not. Either way, I've learned that it's always useful to have someone infiltrate the nobility. You and Sazed will overhear vital items that street informants wouldn't think important. In fact, just by being at these parties, even if you don't overhear anything, you will get us information.
How so? Vin asked, frowning.
Make note of the people who seem interested in you, Kelsier said. Those will be of the houses we want to watch. If they pay attention to you, they're probably paying attention to Lord Renu. And there's one good reason why they would be doing that.
Weapons, Vin said.
Kelsier nodded. Renu's position as a weapons merchant will make him valuable to those who are planning military action. These are the houses on which I'll need to focus my attention. There should already be a sense of tension among the nobility. Hopefully they're starting to wonder which houses are turning against the others. There hasn't been an all-out war among the great houses for over a century. But the last one was devastating. We need to replicate it.
That could mean the deaths of a lot of noblemen, Vin said.
Kelsier smiled. I can live with that. How about you?
Vin smiled, despite her tension.
There's another reason for you to do this, Kelsier said. Sometime during this fiasco of a plan of mine, we might need to face the Lord Ruler. I have a feeling that the fewer people we need to sneak into his presence, the better. Having a Ska Mistborn hiding among the nobility, well, it could be a powerful advantage.
Vin felt a slight chill. The Lord Ruler, will he be there tonight?
No. There will be obligators in attendance, but probably no inquisitors, and certainly not the Lord Ruler himself. A party like this is far beneath his attention. Vin nodded. She'd never seen the Lord Ruler before. She'd never wanted to. Don't worry so much, Kelsier said. Even if you were to meet him, you'd be safe. He can't read minds.
Are you sure?
Kelsier paused. Well, no, but if he can read minds, he doesn't do it to everyone he meets. I've known several Ska who pretended to be noblemen in his presence. I did it several times myself before... He trailed off, glancing down toward his scar-covered hands.
He caught you eventually, Vin said quietly.
And he'll probably do so again, Kelsier said with a wink. But don't worry about him for now. Our goal this evening is to establish Lady Valette Renu. You won't need to do anything dangerous or unusual. Just make an appearance, then leave when Sazed tells you. We'll worry about building confidences later. Vin nodded. Good girl, Kelsier said, reaching out and pushing open the door. I'll be hiding near the keep, watching and listening. Vin nodded gratefully, and Kelsier jumped out of the carriage door, disappearing into the dark mists.
Vin was unprepared for how bright Keep Venture would be in the darkness. The massive building was enveloped in an aura of misty light. As the carriage approached, Vin could see that 8 enormous lights blazed along the outside of the rectangular building. They were as bright as bonfires, yet far more steady, and they had mirrors arranged behind them to make them shine directly on the keep. Vin had trouble determining their purpose. The ball would happen indoors. Why light the outside of the building?
"Head inside, please, Mistress Vin," Sazed said from his position above.
Proper young ladies do not gawk.
Finn shot him a glare he couldn't see, but ducked her head back inside, waiting with impatient nervousness as the carriage pulled up to the massive keep. It eventually rolled to a stop, and a venture footman immediately opened her door. A second footman approached and held out a hand to help her down. Vin accepted his hand, trying with as much grace as possible to pull the frilled, bulky bottom of her dress out of the carriage. As she carefully descended, trying not to trip, she was grateful for the footman's steadying hand, and she finally realized why men were expected to help a lady out of her carriage. It wasn't a silly custom after all. The clothing was the silly part. Sazed surrendered the carriage and took his place a few steps behind her. He wore robes even more fine than his standard fare. Though they still maintained the same V-like pattern, they had a belted waist and wide, enveloping sleeves.
"Forward, mistress," Sazed coached quietly from behind. "Up the carpet, so that your dress doesn't rub on the cobbles, and in through the main doors."
Vin nodded, trying to swallow her discomfort. She walked forward, passing noblemen and ladies in various suits and gowns. Though they weren't looking at her, she felt exposed. Her steps were nowhere near as graceful as those of the other ladies, who looked beautiful and comfortable in their gowns. Her hands began to sweat inside her silky blue-white gloves. She forced herself to continue. Sazed introduced her at the door, presenting her invitation to the attendants. The two men, dressed in black and red servants' suits, bowed and waved her in. A crowd of aristocrats was pooling slightly in the foyer, waiting to enter the main hall.
"What am I doing?" she thought frantically.
She could challenge mist and allomancy, thieves and burglaries, mist wraiths and beatings. Yet facing these noblemen and their ladies, going amongst them in the light, visible, unable to hide, this terrified her.
"Forward, mistress," Sazed said in a soothing voice. "Remember your lessons. Hide. Find a corner. Shadows, mists, anything."
Vin kept her hands clasped rigidly before her, walking forward. Sazed walked beside her. Out of the corner of her eyes, she could see concern on his normally calm face.
"And well he should worry."
Everything he had taught her seemed fleeting, vaporous, like the mists themselves. She couldn't remember names, customs, anything. She stopped just inside the foyer, and an imperious-looking nobleman in a black suit turned to regard her. Vin froze. The man looked her over with a dismissive glance, then turned away. She distinctly heard the word "renew" whispered, and she glanced apprehensively to the side. Several women were looking at her. And yet it didn't feel like they were seeing her at all. They were studying the gown, the hair, and the jewelry. Vin glanced to the other side, where a group of younger men were watching her. They saw the neckline, the pretty dress, and the makeup. But they didn't see her. None of them could see Vin. They could only see the face she had put on, the face she wanted them to see. They saw Lady Valette. It was as if Vin weren't there. As if she were hiding. Hiding right in front of their eyes. And suddenly her tension began to retreat. She let out a long, calming breath, anxiety flowing away. Sazed's training returned, and she adopted the look of a girl amazed by her first formal ball. She stepped to the side, handing her shawl to an attendant, and Sazed relaxed beside her. Vin shot him a smile, then swept forward into the main hall. She could do this. She was still nervous, but the moment of panic was over. She didn't need shadows or corners. She just needed a mask of sapphires, makeup, and blue fabric. The venture main hall was a grand and imposing sight. 4 or 5 daunting stories high, the hall was several times as long as it was wide. Enormous rectangular stained glass windows ran in rows along the hall, and the strange, powerful lights outside shone on them directly, throwing a cascade of colors across the room. Massive, ornate stone pillars were set into the walls, running between the windows. Just before the pillars met the floor, the wall fell away, indenting and creating a single-story gallery beneath the windows themselves. Dozens of white-clothed tables sat in this area, shadowed behind the pillars and beneath the overhang. In the distance, at the far end of the hallway, Vin could make out a low balcony set into the wall, and this held a smaller group of tables.
"The dining table of Lord Streff Venture," Sazed whispered, gesturing toward the far balcony.
Vin nodded.
"And those lights outside?" "Lime lights, mistress," Sazed explained. "I'm not certain the process used. Somehow the quick limestones become heated to brilliance without melting them."
A string orchestra played on a platform to her left, providing music for the couples who danced in the very center of the hall. To her right, serving tables held platter upon platter of foods being attended by scurrying serving men in white. Sazed approached an attendant and presented Vin's invitation. The man nodded, then whispered something in a younger servant's ear. The young man bowed to Vin, then led the way into the room.
"I asked for a small solitary table," Sazed said. "You won't need to mingle during this visit, I think. Just be seen."
Vin nodded gratefully.
"The solitary table will mark you as single," Sazed warned. "Eat slowly. Once your meal is through, men will come to ask you to dance." "You didn't teach me to dance," Vin said in an urgent whisper. "There wasn't time, mistress," Sazed said. "Worry not. Respectfully and rightly, you can refuse these men. They will assume that you are simply flustered by your first ball, and no harm will be done."
Vin nodded, and the serving man led them to a small table near the center of the hallway. Vin seated herself in the only chair while Sazed ordered her meal. He then stepped up to stand behind her chair. Vin sat primly, waiting. Most of the tables lay just beneath the overhang of the gallery, up close to the dancing, and that left a corridor-like walkway behind them, near the wall. Couples and groups passed along this, speaking quietly. Occasionally someone gestured or nodded toward Vin.
"Well, that part of Kelsier's plan is working."
She was getting noticed. She had to force herself not to cringe or sink down in her chair, however, as a high Prelan strolled along the pathway behind her. He wasn't the one she had met, fortunately, though he had the same gray robes and dark tattoos around his eyes. Actually, there were a fair number of obligators at the party. They strolled about, mingling with the partygoers. And yet there was an aloofness to them, a division. They hovered about, almost like chaperones.
"The garrison watches the ska," Vin thought. "Apparently the obligators perform a similar function for the nobility."
It was an odd sight. She'd always thought of the noblemen as being free. And truthfully, they were far more confident than the ska. Many seemed to be enjoying themselves, and the obligators didn't seem to be acting really as police, or even specifically as spies. And yet they were there, hovering about, joining in conversations, a constant reminder of the Lord Ruler and his empire. Vin turned her attention away from the obligators, their presence still made her a bit uncomfortable, and instead focused on something else, the beautiful windows. Sitting where she was, she could see some of the ones directly across and up from where she sat. They were religious, like many scenes preferred by the aristocracy. Perhaps it was to show devotion, or perhaps it was required. Vin didn't know enough, but likely that was something Valette didn't know either, so it was all right. She did, fortunately, recognize some of the scenes, mostly because of Sazed's teachings. He seemed to know as much about the Lord Ruler's mythology as he did about other religions, though it seemed odd to her that he would study the very religion he found so oppressive. Central to many of the windows was the deepness. Dark black, or, in window terms, violet. It was formless, with vengeful, tentacle-like masses creeping across several windows. Vin looked up at it, along with the brilliantly colored depictions of the Lord Ruler, and found herself a little bit transfixed by the backlit scenes.
What was it, she wondered? The deepness. Why depict it so formlessly? Why not show what it really was?
She'd never really wondered about the deepness before, but Sazed's lessons left her wondering. Her instincts whispered scam. The Lord Ruler had invented some terrible menace that he'd been able to destroy in the past, therefore earning his place as Emperor. And yet, staring up at the horrible, twisting thing, Vin could almost believe. What if something like that had existed? And if it had, how had the Lord Ruler managed to defeat it? She sighed, shaking her head at the thoughts. Already she was beginning to think too much like a noblewoman. She was admiring the beauty of the decorations, thinking about what they meant, without giving more than a passing thought to the wealth that had created them. It was just that everything here was so wondrous and ornate. The pillars in the hall weren't just normal columns, they were carved masterpieces. Wide banners hung from the ceiling just above the windows, and the arching lofty ceiling was crisscrossed by structural buttressings and dotted with capstones. Somehow she knew each of those capstones was intricately carved, despite the fact that they were too far away to be seen from below. And the dancers matched, perhaps even outshone, the exquisite setting. Couples moved gracefully, stepping to the soft music with seemingly effortless motions. Many were even chatting with one another while they danced. The ladies moved freely in their dresses, many of which Vin noticed made her own frilly garment look plain by comparison. Sazed was right. Long hair was certainly the fashion, though an equal number kept their hair up as let it down. Surrounded by the majestic hall, the sharp-suited noblemen looked different somehow. Distinguished. Were these the same creatures that beat her friends and enslaved the Ska? They seemed too perfect, too well-mannered for such horrible acts. I wonder if they even notice the outside world, she thought, crossing her arms on the table as she watched the dancing. Perhaps they can't see beyond their keeps and their balls, just like they can't see past my dress and makeup. Sazed tapped her shoulder, and Vin sighed, adopting a more ladylike posture. The meal arrived a few moments later, a feast of such strange flavors that she would have been daunted had she not eaten similar fare often during the last few months. Sazed's lessons might have omitted dancing, but they had been quite extensive regarding dining etiquette, for which Vin was grateful. As Kelsier had said, her main purpose of the evening was to make an appearance, and so it was important that she make a proper one. She ate delicately, as instructed, and that allowed her to be slow and meticulous. She didn't relish the idea of being asked to dance. She was half afraid she'd panic again if anyone actually spoke to her. However, a meal could only be extended so long, especially one with a lady's small portions. She soon finished and set her fork across the plate, indicating that she was done. The first suitor approached not 2 minutes later.
"Lady Valette Renoux?"
the young man asked, bowing just slightly. He wore a green vest beneath his long dark suit coat.
"I am Lord Ryan Strobe. Would you care to dance?"
"My lord," Vin said, glancing down demurely, "you are kind, but this is my first ball, and everything here is so grand. I fear that I'll stumble from nervousness on the dance floor. Perhaps next time?"
"Of course, my lady," he said with a courteous nod, then withdrew.
"Very well done, mistress," Sazed said quietly. "Your accent was masterful."